for anything and everything that you want to write this week before our coffee house at the weekend. It doesn't have to be a dream, it can be a prayer, it can be a song, it can be a button, it can be anything you want to put in, it can be a story. Just put them all in there. Anything you want to write or have discovered this week that you'd like to put in, put it in. This morning, it's the angry young man called Job. I think for many of us, the moment we say the word anger, it more or less means a sin to us. When we get angry, we sort of have been taught it's naturally wrong, it's evil to get angry. But we all get angry. It's part of our nature as men to get angry. And some people will keep it in, and some people will let it out. Some will stew, and some will explode. And I wonder what each one of you does with the anger that stirs up inside of you. Everyone has it, whether he likes to admit it or not, and the little girl who spoke a moment ago said it right. Let's be honest and straight with the facts. We all get angry. And when someone gets angry at you, what do? Turn that person off, say they have no right. You get hurt, you walk away. Or do you ever use that as the air through the window, the gush through the window, that finally opened the door so that what was happening really got out into the open and a chance to see things as they really are between you and that person, or between that person and another, or that person and God. So it's very important that every one of us admit that we do get angry, and probably that we should get angry every so often. And we should get angry not only at others, but also at many things in the church. Many things that need to be slapped in the face, that need to be exposed for what they are. Whether it's the rather effeminate Jesus that so often is put before us, the sweet young girl who is always nice and who never gets angry, who never flashes the whip in the temple, who never calls the scribes a bunch of dirty stinkers, hypocrites, and fools. A Christ who is just like a sweet young demure lady. Or whether it's a lot of those things in the church that are phony and are not really honest faith, honest talking back to God. To get angry is important. And I would like to hope that many of us finally get a chance not only to have the prayers of the lonely in church, but the prayers of the angry. That what we hear in church is as honest as what we hear on the street. And the man whose prayer of anger I'd like to present this morning, a man who did just that, crack at the traditions and crack at those people who were supposed to be his comforters, but who gave him nothing but phony back talk, nothing but the old stereotype. This is a story of Job and his struggle with God, one of the greatest stories in literature. The situation is very simple. You've got the heavenly council, all of the heavenly beings are sitting there, and along comes all of the reporters back from the patrolling upon the earth. And one of the patrollers, who had checked on what's going on, comes back, and his name is Satan, which means the one who does the accusing, the prosecuting attorney in the heavenly council, in the heavenly court. And when they get back from their patrol, God says, well, how are things? Oh, fine, everyone says, world's going great, God. And then God said to the prosecutor, well, where have you been? Oh, he said, I've been wandering around, seeing lots of things. And God said, well, what about Job? Now, there's a man who really shows you what faith is all about. There's quite a man. And Job says, well, You know, God, the only reason why that man believes in you and loves you and worships you is because you put a hedge around him. You gave him everything. And when you give a man everything, he's naturally going to be thankful. You know, he's going to bless God if you bless him all the time, God. And so the argument goes on. And they have a little wager. And Robert Frost sort of captures this beautifully at this point, where he has a little thing about Job, a mask of reason it's called, and God's having this little dialogue with Job, and he says, Job, I was only showing off to the devil. I hope you don't mind. And Job says, no, it was very human of you. And we sort of feel a little of that as we get this wager between God and the devil, and finally, of God and Satan, the accuser in the council, and finally the chance comes for all of this to come out. And Job is stripped of everything. So there's nothing left but his bare life. Just the bare man and God. Nothing in between. No good things, no blessings, no hope, no nothing except in the man and God. The total, final, last clash. And then Job is still saying, the Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. He's still saying this. On and on, this pious platitude, which has to be checked and tested by the poems in the book. He's still saying it. And by the way, there was once in my life when that pious platitude came home. I came home one day from playing tennis, and our house was entirely in flames. And the pastor arrived in his car, charging down, and he came and he said to us and the family, he said, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And I was angry. I was very angry at that moment. That comforter didn't quite know. And I know something about the meaning of possessions as a result. And so it ends up being, as the text says, skin for skin. God and man, skin for skin. Nothing left but just the bare life. And then comes the anger of Job. The anger that breaks out against God again and again and again. And he says he needs somehow to get a hold of God. God has done all of this. He's taken everything from him. He's left him nothing but pain. Not only just life for life, but pain and God. Angry and God. And we have a series of three fantastic poems about the anger of Job with God. And each one of them ends up the same way, with the need for someone to mediate. Here am I, and there is God. He's got all the answers, and he won't give me any. He's got all the power, and he won't give me any. He's got all the life, and he leaves me with pain. He's got all the hope, and he gives me nothing. Where is there a mediator? Someone who can stand between us. Listen to just a few of these poems. The first one, I'll take a few verses from chapter 9. Lo, he passes me by, and I see him not. He moves on, and I do not perceive him. Verse 11. He snatches. Who can stop him? Who will say to him, what are you doing, God? Though I am innocent, I can't answer him. I can't appeal for mercy to my accuser. He crushes with a tempest. He will not let me get my breath. He fills me with anger and bitterness. And though I am brainless, he seems to prove me perverse. I wash myself with snow. I cleanse my hands with lye. And yet he plunges me into the pit. And my own clothes abhor me. He's not a man like I am, that I can talk to him, answer him, that we can come to trial together. There's no umpire between us who can put one hand on my shoulder and one on the shoulder of God. The need for a Christ, or the same thing in another prayer. God gives me up to the ungodly. And listen to this catalog. We read this one once before, but it's still one of my favorite poems. I was at ease and he broke me. He seized me by the neck and he dashed me to pieces. He set me up as a target. His archers surround me. He slashes my kidneys. He pours out my gall. He breaks me. He runs upon me like a warrior. I've been sewing my sackcloth to my skin. I'm laid in the dust, and my face is red with weeping, and my eyes are deep in darkness, although my prayer is pure. Earth, cover not my blood. Let it cry to heaven. For now I believe, behold, my witness is in heaven. There's got to be someone. If there's no one on earth, there's none of the three comforters that can help him. There's got to be somebody in heaven, somebody in that council up there. Somebody's got to take his place before the prosecuting attorney and defend him. Defend his innocence, he wants. Defend his right to stand before God, to have a mediator. He needs a mediator who can understand and who can stand before God. And the third one is the one that you all know, that famous passage. He first calls him an umpire, the second time he calls him the Negro, mediator, and the third time he calls him a redeemer. And they're all the one and the same person, the person he needs, who can be in the court of God and in the court of man and defend his case. Listen to his need again, his anger. Chapter 19 now, starting with verse 13. My brethren have gone away. My acquaintances are estranged. My kinfolk have failed me. My guests have forgotten me. My servants are strangers. I'm an alien in everybody's eyes. I call my servant, he gives me no answer. I beseech him. I'm repulsive to my wife, loathsome to my sons and my mother. Even young children hate me. All my intimate friends abhor me. My bones cleave to my skin. Have pity on me, my friends, for the hand of the Lord has touched me. Why do you, like God, pursue me? Why are you satisfied with my flesh? And then he comes out with that final scream. Oh, that my words were written in a book, that were inscribed in a book, engraven in rock. For I know that I have a Redeemer who's living. Someone who will stand on the earth and defend me. Someone who will take my case. And no one has said it better than Job. The need for a redeemer. The need for Christ. Who can mediate for God and man. And at the end of the book, God doesn't really answer Job. He shows him his power. He struggles with Job. There's no answer to all of these questions of why this man suffers. It's simply that he had his encounter with God. And he ends up by saying, sure, I knew God by hearsay. There's one simple answer that comes out, verse 5, 42, 5. I've heard of God by the hearing of the ear, by the traditions, by what everyone else says. But now my eye sees him. I had my struggle with God. I don't have all the answers, but at least I know that God is there. That's where it ends. That's where it ends. And the need for Christ is still hanging in a certain sense. And the need for a comforter is still hanging. And the answer comes in Christ for us too. That he is able to stand before the court and defend each one of us, even if we are as self-righteous as Job, because he is ours, he defends us. Even if we are as angry as Job, he is able to get angry before God and say, this is your people, this is your man. I'm taking his case for you. I'm defending Janine and John and Joan. Vinny, and Bob, and every man before God. And every one of us must learn to be more than just a comforter, more than one of those three men who have simple answers. We also have to learn to be people who can mediate, who can be Christ, who can be that mediator who defends each other and listens to each other
and who is Christ to each other day to day. And I would ask you to listen not just for the lonely people that are in our midst, but to listen, if you can, for the angry people, the people who are angry at themselves and at others and the world and life and above all at God, and see if you can't be for them someone who mediates, not comforts with old answers, but mediates love, empathy, forgiveness, joy, celebration, that Christ might be alive, the mediator might come today.